Today on New Letters on the Air, poetry that reflects Hispanic island life from a Kansas City Writer's Place reading. First, Gustavo Adolfo Ibar, born in the Dominican Republic and now a Missouri resident, presents his book, We Seek Asylum. Then Missouri-born Mia Leonan, who now resides closer to her Cuban roots in Miami, shares her fifth book, Fable of the Pack Settled Child, a fictional tale for adults from Bookmark Press that won a 2019 International Latino Book Award. I'm Angela Elam with New Letters Magazine at UMKC, and here's Cave Canem fellow Gustavo Adolfo Ibar with his grand prize winner of Michigan's Willow Book Literature Awards, We Seek Asylum.
Thank you for being here, and thank you to the Writer's Place for allowing me space and time to read and share some work with you. Just to give a little bit of context to the collection, I'm originally from the Dominican Republic. I was born there, but raised in New York, LA, Miami Beach, and now here. So as a way to educate myself on my culture, on what it is to be Latino, that's what UMKC did for me in terms of my bachelor's in Spanish literature, and then my MA in Romance languages. And then, of course, doing some other work in regards to African American lit, and then Caribbean studies. But for me, this collection was more about trying to understand what it is to be from my country, what it is to be Latino, a man, a father, and deal with the birth father issues that I have, and as a new parent, trying to be better and break some of those cycles. So here we go. Satchel Paige is just a fictional father figure. He is not related to me. This is titled Remembering the Dead. We have these pictures, you see, his legend. You have his laugh. Grandpa Satch played with flair from sandlots to big league stadiums. He'd arrive, and it was like the sun coming from behind the cloud. This season on the island, Uncle Josh, the Trujillo Dragons, there aren't any people alive who were there to tell it. Oh, the homers, the pitches, the freedom, the fear. They were all stars, I say. As we move along the Negro League's museum, I tell my son stories. Of your lore, I speak, your name and claim, you kin. I speak your name and claim you kin. I tell my son stories of your lore as we move along the Negro League's museum. They were all stars, I say. Oh, the homers, the pitches, the freedom, the fear. There aren't any people alive who were there to tell it. This season on the island, Uncle Josh, the Trujillo Dragons, he'd arrive, and it was like the sun coming from behind a cloud. Grandpa Satch played with flair from sandlots to big league stadiums. We have these pictures. You see his legend. You have his laugh. I love hybrid texts. And so that's what I did with this collection. There's a lot of poems that deal with the dictatorship in the country with Rafael Trujillo, who reigned for about 31 years, from 31, I believe, until 1962. So this is the biography timeline. I won't read it all. I'll just read different sections. The Rise of a Dictator, Rafael Leonidas Trujillo Molina, Chapitas. Born October 24, 1891, San Cristobal, Dominican Republic, later known as Bethlehem. Nearly dies from diphtheria at age 7, see inauguration of Dr. Miguel Brioso Bustillo's hospital, see penitential right. Nicknamed Chapitas, slang for the bottle caps he collected like bodies, see how to abolish a word from a people's vocabulary, see rope, see bullet. 1913, at 22, works as a security guard for a sugar company and as a telegraph operator, serves jail time for theft, then again for forgery. 1928, becomes Chief of Staff Brigadier General of the National Army. August 1930, at 39 years of age, Trujillo assumes office of the Presidency of the Dominican Republic. Summer 1937. The acquisition of many professional Negro League baseball players like Satchel Paige, Cool Papa Bell, and many others led to Trujillo creating one of the greatest teams ever assembled in the history of the sport. The season was so costly that professional baseball on the island did not resume again until 1951. October 2nd, 1937. The cutting. C, sprig of parsley. C, articulatory difficulties in the acquisition of Spanish R. C, Haitian genocide. I forget who has a poem called Parsley. Rita Dove, she wrote about the massacre, and then I read Edward Dantacott's book, The Farming of Bones, which definitely deals with all of that. So I wrote a poem about the massacre. It's titled Diminution. Like rats, colonized and plagued, we run. Whiskers whisk rapidly, brush against the bushes, against the tree bark, like termites in a spherical nest within the wood, made of mud, saliva, and shit. We run like rats, run bodies parallel to ground, to roots, absorb the water, inhale the crown's oxygen. Like rats, we run. We run like Trujillo ran for public office, between and behind the bullet and the rope. We run like the Marines ran drills into Dominican muscle memory. This is my rifle. There are many like it, but this one is mine. We run like the French and the Spaniards ran the island. Divided, we run. We run like borders, veils not many people can wear. We run like machetes, hold the weapon loosely between the thumb and forefinger. Snap it forward, focus on speed, like Olympic sprinters, like Jesse Owens, we run. Run that blade through the air, aim the apex at the macho, split it open like coconuts, break through the husk, slice into the worthless skin, down to the tender flesh, we run, like something meant for field work, something less than human, we run. We run like fingers move through rosaries, intent on prayers. We run like elk from black bears. We run like foxes from coyotes. Run like tarantulas from spider wasps. We run past these woods, past the swamp, past the fire and smoke and scent of burning bodies, past the screams, the metal clinks and clunks, the proof of broken language lying prostrate, past the sugar cane. We run like cheetahs, like Model Ts, like Chevy Packards, like Mustangs, like Jaguars. We run like, we run past, past El Rio de Jabón to the Tetelo Vargas Stadium in San Pedro de Macorís, past the dugouts once filled with Negro Leaguers and ready rifles and shouting fans, past the bleachers, the pitcher's mound, the diamond and the dirt. We run past the bases, stealing glimpses of home. We run like cool Papa Bell. We run like light towards a long enough neck, a short enough mouth. We run faster than light toward a more flexible tongue to push our stories from lungs to larynx to lips. We run, we run, we run like light past the silence.
Gustavo Adolfo Ibar, with poetic insight into the turbulent political history of his birth country, the Dominican Republic. Now, back to baseball, with two poems at the end of this book, We Seek Asylum. The next one is inspired by a John Ed Bradley essay. This is New Letters on the Air.
Stealing home. You should have seen my father's arms swinging proudly down the street as he held his lover's hand. You should have seen my father's hand, fingers draped tight, tender around the palm as he held that lover's hand. You should have seen my father's face. You should have seen my mother's face as he cocked his lover's hand. You should have witnessed his stance, seen him shoulder and mount the arm like a shotgun, pull and push the weapon back as he released his lover's hand. You should have felt the buildings shake. You should have heard each voice quiver, then boom, like small, shallow earthquakes as he cursed his lover's hand. You should have seen the signs crash and crumble like Trujillo's corpse, streets screaming and crying, 1961 again, as he disposed of his lover's hand. You should have watched the Cruz de Malta scent plant itself in my mother's memory, reminding her she is animal, as she followed his lover's hand. You should have noticed my thrill, seen my bat and satchel fall, heard my footsteps headed towards my father as he imagined his lover's hand. You should have seen his lover rounding the corners like bases as my mother's name escaped his lips as he petitioned his lover's hand. You should have seen the ring get pitched, my mother's knuckleball, little to no spin, difficult to control or catch, as my father's story debased his lover's hand. You should have heard the Aybar family break, seen our household split and shatter like bones, like bats, like waves, like dawns breaking as he held his lover's hand. This title is as if my son asked me a question and he knows he never asked me that. And he openly says it. So for you, for asking me why I love baseball so much. Because baseball players are as much artists as painters or sculptors. And yes, because everyone deserves to see great art often. Because it is fall and the crisp night air fills with the crack of bats and stomp of feet and grown men with guttural growls who chew tobacco and play a game they love. Because really, didn't we all pretend to make the game-winning play? The Lorenzo Cain three-run double, or the Gordon Homer, the ball smaller and smaller in the royal blue sky. The aggressive sprint for a run, bold and dramatic, with Hosmer stealing home, or the Davis fastball, inside corner, inches away from the bat, faster than a blink. Because maybe the batter blinked and only heard the thunderous swoop of the ball landing like a meteor on Salvi's mitt. Because baseball can be an island, can be a country, a world, and a loss is paramount to heartache or death, and a rally can be a planet discovered, a moon. Because a win can be a shutout, can be hard fought, can be a comeback, can be overdue. Because a win can be a childhood dream, an answered prayer, my father reborn, his teeth, his glass of rum, his burning throat. Or it can be my mother, her fragile hands, no discoordination of movement, no resting tremor, one hand to support my infant neck, the other my bottom, cradled safely in this stadium as they climb steps, maneuver between aisles and peanut vendors. Because this game can explain a life lived, a year or six, a moment or two, this breath. Thank you.
Gustavo Adolfo Aybar, referencing the 2015 World Series win by the Kansas City Royals over the New York Mets in his collection, We Seek Asylum, published in 2017 as Willow Books Grand Prize winner. His earlier chapbook is called Between the Lines from Spartan Press. Next up at the Writer's Place is Mia Leonen, a graduate of Rutgers University who's the author of four poetry books and a memoir called Havana and Other Missing Fathers. She returned to Kansas City, her birthplace, to read from her 2018 book-length poem published by Bookmark Press. It's colorfully illustrated by Cuban-born artist Nereida Garcia Ferez, who resides in Miami, where Mia has lived since 2000. The title, Fable of the Pack-Saddle Child, refers to the old French fil de bast, a child conceived on packs pulled from a horse's saddle and used as a bed. Here's more from Mia Leonen.
This is a fable for adults. Some pretty powerful things happen. I wouldn't want like children, middle school aged or elementary, to read it. I think it would be a little disturbing. From high school on up, I think it's perfect. But I wanted it to be a fable for adults because I think, especially now more than ever, one of the things we most suffer from is not being able to see other points of view, not being able to see often what's like right in front of us, hidden in plain sight. And that's the suffering of other people. Micaela lives in a Spanish-speaking city by the sea, and she undergoes a traumatic assault. And in dealing with that, she takes refuge in her imagination. I'm going to start with an introduction of Micaela's character and her mom's character. So this is Calle Bernardo, where the scene takes place. It's also on the cover. Morning sputters, Kai Bernardo snakes along the sea's periphery. One street over, Micaela walks to school. She clutches her satchel and comb. She reaches into her skirt pocket to pinch her lucky opal. Micaela is a 10-year-old of few miracles. She can point to a bird and balance a passing plane on her finger. She's fluent in cat talk and the sign language of trees. She thinks she can stop her heart by holding her breath. This text I was working on for a very long time, and when it finally slipped into place, which in part had to do with point of view, because I'm a lover of the dramatic monologue and the first person poem, and when I switched to third person and envisioned a little girl named Micaela, that came out when I just switched point of view, like the key that turns the ignition, that gets the car going, or at least it was for me. And then I sent that to my friend Nereida Garcia Ferraz, never dreaming that she would do illustrations for my book, in part because she's not a book illustrator, she's an amazing artist, sculptor, video maker. And I sent her the text in a doc file, and she read it, and she sent me back a haunting image. Audre Lorde says, truth and authenticity comes from a dark, ancient place. And I saw that dark, ancient place in Nereida's drawing, and I was like, oh, she gets it. And so we started working together, and she created all these amazing images in response to the text. This is an image that Nereida drew of Micaela's mother, and here's the text that I wrote about the mother to introduce her. Micaela's mother's black eyes and hair sparkle when she speaks. Her aquiline nose protrudes unabashedly, and big, strong teeth crowd her mouth, giving her the curious beauty of a mare. She possesses few unusual or exceptional talents. She can brew liquor on the stove and from that whip up an ice cream that requires no churning. She owns one pair of scissors, and with that one blade she can shave a man's face, poke a hole in a cloudy day, and whistle the Ave Maria through a blade and a piece of paper. All of this she can do with one blade. Tengo mi manera. Micaela's mother has a way about her. She says so herself. Smiling so broadly, her red lipstick leaves a half-moon smudge on her left front tooth. She knows how to talk her way out of 8 days late rent or the fee of an unpaid electric bill. Men with thick, ruddy fingers pinch her, and she shrieks in mock surprise. The baker tosses an extra empanada into her sack with a wink. The butcher brandishes his carving knife with a gallant flourish and slices a piece of discounted meat with an extra wide ribbon of fat. From their street corner perches, tall, gaunt men circle their hands in the air like magicians when Micaela's mother passes by. Still, Micaela's mother doesn't command the attention of men who own sailboats or men who buy steaks and rubies. She still has to say, sí, por favor, gracias, no pasa nada, we'll be fine. What's revealed in the book is Micaela's mother left her little village under very serious circumstances, poverty and some other things that involve shame with the village that are revealed in the story. And she started out on her own with this little baby in tow. So part of their life involves living on the margin. And one of the things that's been important to me forever in my work is writing from perspectives that aren't always seen. I've written poems from the point of view of Fidel Castro's mother. I've written poems from Mary Magdalene's point of view. I've written poems from the points of view of people I couldn't stand because I wanted to understand those points of view. But with this one, part of her character is this fabled imaginary place. And part of her character is her mother. And her mother's young and feisty and doesn't have a lot of time to be a mother. So Micaela sort of makes do along the way with the help of some very special people, which I'll get to in a poem or two. So I'm just going to read a little bit more about Calle Bernardo and about the mother's world. On Calle Bernardo, men gape in draping overcoats. Liver-voiced women snap and bark their wares in the rain. The neighborhood children steer clear of the former and are scattered to the street by the latter. Children form the undigested meaning of each moment. They chew and chew, sucking the gristle of its fat. They chew, and pools of hunger well up in their mouths. They pick at scabbed knees and grow dizzy from the blood scent. When they smell rain, their incisors ache to taste the damp earth and clay. Once, in preparation for a blind date, Micaela's mother sold her great-grandmother's pearl brooch in order to buy one stocking woven from pure Serafina opaque silk. The entire evening she waited with one leg on flagrant display and the other naked and crouching beneath the tablecloth like a hungry dog. Micaela's mother rubs a lipstick back and forth across her lower lip four times and then a fifth. She presses her lips together and sings with the rising melody of a bolero, ¿Qué te parece, chica? And then repeats the line, letting each note tumble after the other. ¿Qué te parece?
You're listening to Fable of the Pack Saddle Child by Mia Leonin here on New Letters on the Air.
So I wanted this to be something that adults would read, but that they had to go in like Alice in Wonderland, in a sense they had to see it through a child's eyes. So the perspective is all from a child's eyes, to the point where none of the adults get a name unless they're nice to Micaela. And one of those adults that's nice to Micaela is named Señora López, and that's one of her teachers. So I'll just read you a little bit about Señora López and school. The school door opens with a crack, whistles and giggles, skin slaps and clapping games pour out. Señora López's brown wrists brim eternal against a slate-green chalkboard. In her maple-leaf dress, she recites letters. Broken circle C, tie it tight O, add another B, one leg kicking R. Micaela's dark hair falls in a messy curtain across her desk. The pink blush of eraser filament sticks to her sleeping cheek. Señora López lets her rest, just as she lets others wash themselves in the school lavatory or wind toilet paper around their hands like mittens and slip it into their pockets. Señora López concentrates on her grading while the children sneak cold coffee cans of leftover rice and beans into their satchels. One day, Señora López is teaching the alphabet, and this is a turning point in the story for Micaela. In part of her imagination enters the Spanish letter ñ, and the tilde on top, she falls in love with that tilde, and she starts following it all over town, and it takes her on some adventures. The ñ was originally a double N. That's how the double N was shown in Spanish, and typesetters started putting the second N on top of the other, and that made the tilde. So Micaela wants to be held. She wants to feel safe in a world where she doesn't feel safe. She wants to be loved in a world where love is very unpredictable and precarious. And this amazing teacher comes into her life, and this isn't a Hallmark, Hallmark down the street. This isn't a ABC after school special where she gets everything she needs and goes off American style into some happy ending and the credits roll and we all go home with our bellies full and our hearts content. It's a real story about real people and about the idea of trauma and trauma on children and how that gets into your bones, it gets into your body, and how resilience also is in your bones and in your body. And one doesn't exclude the other, but one can't always defeat the other either. A fine scar runs from beneath Señora López's right nostril to the bow of her upper lip, Whether smiling or shouting, her mouth twists into a slight sneer. She strains above the screeching children and shouts, "Cana, caña." Señora López completes the letter, big N with a little N above. One N alights atop the other like a butterfly on a sleeping nostril. Ñe, Micaela sees a little N leapfrog atop a mono and land as moño. A little N pops up behind big N and forlorn pena sparkles in the peña. Señora López says that in the world of Ñe, for everything large, a smaller part exists. The children shout out examples, olive and pit, egg and yolk, pillow and feather, pastelito and crumb. Micaela thinks mother and daughter. She draws Ñe after Ñe. The dip and squiggle of her pencil comforts her. Like the nights her mother would come home in a cloud of jasmine and champagne bubbles. She would climb into Micaela's bed and hold her, molding Micaela's small body into her long one, as if she were a doll placed high on a shelf for safekeeping. Ñe, Ñe, Ñe. So a traumatic event occurs with Micaela. It's a sexual assault. We're trying to come up with a descriptive text on the back of the book. And even in that time, the conversation in our culture about Me Too and women and men coming out about sexual assault had augmented to such an extent that it has to be called a traumatic assault. Can't call it a traumatic event. Event became a euphemism. But as she tries to deal with what's happened to her, that Ñe that was just fun to scribble and that her teacher sort of gave her this assignment to find the words that have Ñe or don't have Ñe, the Ñe becomes almost like her way of disconnecting and like a life source for her. And she starts following it around town and takes refuge in it. And she starts seeing it in things, in images. So this is where like resilience and disassociation commingle, and you'll have to read the book to know more about that. But I'll read a little bit of this Ñe text, things she starts to see from the tilde. In the dark, Micaela traces a tilde in her palm with her forefinger, a clown's crooked bow tie, the string of a balloon slipped from a child's hand, the thread of a hem unraveled. Micaela wakes to an earthworm coiling to the touch, the sleepy waves of her hair in the morning mirror, the vapor that escapes the pot when Doña Nina lifts the lid of her beef stew for customers only. At night, Micaela's mother and the actor make laughing sounds and hungry sounds. And I'll leave it there with hungry sounds. Thank you all.
Mia Leonen at the Writer's Place in Kansas City in 2018 with Fable of the Pack-Saddled Child. Published by Bookmark Press, it won second place in the 2019 International Latino Book Awards. For links to her and Gustavo Adolfo Ibar, visit newletters.org. From New Letters Magazine at UMKC, the show was produced with Danny Reeves, Ashley Coate, Dylan Cramhorn, Dylan Piles, Chloe Syme, and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.